So hi everyone, my name is Purucha Patel. I'm from Boston University and I'm here with four of my teammates. We're in our junior year at the School of Management and our project this semester is to create a product and bring it from concept through development. So we're in that process right now. We're here today, and again, thank you for allowing us to come in and ask you guys a few questions. We just want some feedback on the progress that we've made. We're thinking of developing an e-reader. It's going to have a refreshable braille display. We're differentiating it from other items on the market and devices by trying to keep our costs low under $1,000 and just focusing it on translating e-books and also other documents. So the questions that we have for you today are more just about the design aspect. We've been in touch with different engineers about using new and upcoming technology. That's how we aim to keep the cost low. Our questions are more geared towards how we can, you know, make you aware about this product, different design aspects of the product, what you would prefer, and what's more aesthetically pleasing for you.
Just so you guys have a better idea about the product, it's kind of like a bar. It's not like a tablet anymore. It's a bar, and it's 40 cells across, and it's two cells down. We did some research and found that the majority of braille reading is done two lines at a time. Am I right?
No.
You're totally wrong. Well, many people use two hands to read, and they'll put one hand on the next line. When they're reading paper braille, they'll put one hand on the next line. In the middle. But most people are very accustomed to a one-line braille display on a refreshable braille display.
Also, you could download any ebook from the internet, and you could download it onto your onto what we're calling the e-braille right now. You could also download any computer documents, any Word documents, and it'll transform it into binary code, which would transfer it into braille that would make the dots raise up on the refreshable braille display. What is the maximum price that you would be willing to pay for a product like this?
I mean, how would you download something onto it? Are you talking wireless?
It has a USB connection.
Okay.
And you would hook it up to your laptop, and that's also how you would charge it.
Okay,
so... Could you download Kindle Books onto it?
Yes.
That's one of the questions we actually had is, you know, to keep our costs down, we were debating between, you know, having an audio function, you know, having a speaker, having a headphone jack, if that's something that you guys prefer to have that as an option in the product also.
Probably less than 15% of blind people are proficient braille readers, so you increase your market dramatically if you added audio to it. Adding audio to it would probably not add a lot to the cost. The most expensive part of the cost is going to be the braille display, unless you have come up with some new technology for producing braille significantly less expensively.
So one of our questions that we had is, I know you guys come to meetings like this, but is there anywhere else that you go online, any stores that you go to, that you find out about new braille technologies?
Tons of websites. I could give you probably a list of 30 websites without even thinking.
All right, and
podcasts, and there are magazines. Both the ACB and NFB have magazines, and there are tons of websites and podcasts. And
there are also blind training centers.
Blind training centers throughout the country. I mean, there are just tons of... You'll have no problem having places to get the information to.
And once you have the information, like your watch or any readers that you currently have, where do you normally purchase those items?
You either buy them online, you go to conventions, or you buy them from a dealer or a state agency or a dealer.
There does tend to be one store in each major metropolitan area, in some places anyway. Here we have one at the Carroll Center in Newton. You're going to put a USB port on it anyway and be able to connect it to a computer. Why not take it one step further and be able to use it as a braille display driven by the computer? Because most of the braille displays that we can buy today are quite expensive. If you could come up with something less expensive, it could be used as an e-book reader and also to read
the websites on the computer. Yeah, so you can hook up like a keyboard and you hook up to the computer. You can hook up to that one and then still read everything on the computer using a display.
That's very doable, because that's just a question of the right software.
One of the main purposes of creating this product is portability. So all the documents, like, you download them so you can read them, you know, if you're traveling or, you know, wherever you are. And we want to know, like, what types of uses you would download. Would you just download ebooks? Would you download files that you need to read for work? Would you download textbooks, you know, educational resources? What could you see yourself using this product for?
Anything I can read in Braille, available to be in Braille, I will almost always read in Braille.
Braille. We do. So the more versatile it is, the better.
Newspapers.
Textbooks are great, but I'm a teacher of blind students.
Textbooks.
Cookbooks.
Reading real music.
Basically, I think what you're going to hear from people in general is whatever it is that they want to read. Probably, I mean, mathematics would be tough on one line, I think.
Yeah.
But anything that you can read in Braille.
Any kind of text.
Foreign language is particularly important if you're a student. And you want to be able to not only download from sources, but you also want to be able to make sure that whatever documents you prepare, you also can read on your display, because you want to be able to create documents. I could see taking this with me if I wanted to go shopping, for example, food shopping.
So you're reading text documents.
Yeah, read Word and text documents.
Mm-hmm. And did you say how much you were planning on selling this for? Did you say under 1,000?
Under 1,000.
Yeah.
You talk about e-readers. Well, there's about 50 different types of e-books out there. So what?
Most of which we can't even.
What would you? I mean,
what we've heard from the software engineers is that they could put together a software that could take any type of file, download it into a regular text file, and then download it into the Braille formatting.
Okay, you have to have a Braille translator.
Yeah.
It's not enough to take a file and dump it into a text document that then takes all the formatting out of it and creates what they used to call in my generation grade one Braille, now uncontracted Braille. That's not acceptable. Very few people are going to buy that.
Yeah.
You need to have Braille translation software so that it is correctly translated into BANA-approved Braille. BANA is the Braille Authority of North America. You want approved Braille code. You can't just dump it. This sounds much easier than it really is. Dump it.
180 contractions, 180 abbreviations that are standard, and your display would need to use them. So, for example, the word FOR is written as all six dots.
One symbol.
And that is the symbol for the word for. And that is the standard that everybody who reads Braille learns and knows.
And if you're going to do things like foreign languages
or music, or math,
there are separate notations for those as well. So you really are going to have to hook up. There is, with Braille translation software, there's a company in Massachusetts called Duxbury that creates a Braille translation program, and you're going to have to do something like that.
The plan is to have it convert any kind of document, and then assuming we could get it to be this BANA approved.
Yeah, it means it has to have all the standard conventions of Braille.
If we could get it standardized, and you could download any kind of document onto the e-Braille, that would make it more attractive, right?
No, you cannot sell a Braille display without it meeting those standards.
Okay, and we were planning to have the software downloadable from our website instead of coming with a CD with the e-Braille.
Yep, that's good.
Would the software install automatically, though? Because you're not going to have any prompts to tell you whether it's installing or not. Let's say I get this device and I plug it into my computer and my computer sees it as an external drive, and I copy the software over to it. Would the device be smart enough then to just know automatically to install the software?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, it would work on Windows and Mac.
Why would you want to make the downloading and installation of the software a separate process? Why not just have
it
onboard ROM?
There's two different softwares. There's the one that actually does the refreshable Braille that makes it come up, and that one's already in the device. But the software that translates all those files will be on your computer.
The goal, to me anyway, if I have a portable device, I don't want to have to do anything but just plug it in, grab what I have, and have the device already have everything in it that it needs to do the translation. And I don't want to have to install that software, by the way.
Yeah, but you're going to have to install upgrades.
But then the process has got to be as seamless and as automatic as it can be. You're going to have to make that a pretty bulletproof process for people who are not techies. The techies aren't going to have a problem.
I don't know of any.
Yeah, but you already got, like, the Victor Stream,
yeah.
Book sets, and all those that require this
it's
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you buy a Braille display, okay, it has software built into it to make it work. If there is some other software that's essential for this unit working, why not build it into it anyway? Why should I have to install something else to make this work?
Because it's going to need to be upgraded at some point.
Well, you need a capacity to be able to download upgrades as and when needed. But when I go and buy the unit, from a store, right. I should be able to use it if I want. And also to help with the market audience. I mean, imagine someone in a developing country that gets a device. They don't have access to internet. It may take them months to be able to get anywhere near a computer that will allow them to download upgrades.
On the issue of price, that's going to be a huge challenge because the blind market is tiny, and then the blind market who uses Braille is even tinier. And you know, refreshable Braille displays, it's like, what's the cheapest? $2,500.
The cheapest is $1,000, and it has 12 Braille cells.
So we were talking as though that software is being downloaded into the device. That software that's being put into the computer that you're going to download from the web, that's for the computer side of it. So it's no different than the printer stream software or something.
Yeah.
You would also market like state commissions for the blind and the like, because when you start getting into heavier amounts of money and you're talking about students, there aren't that many people who are going to buy those themselves with their own cash.
We're going to have rubber grips on the back of the e-braille to make it easier to hold. Would that be appealing? And we would also have a lanyard that would connect to the e-braille so you could put it around your neck.
You know how heavy will the unit be? Because most Braille displays, portable or not, I mean, they are really heavy already.
We're not sure about the weight yet, but we want to make it as lightweight as possible.
Do you know what technology you're going to use? Thin space?
We were thinking of using MEMS technology. Would rubber grips on the back make it easier to hold, or would that be useless?
Usually, if you use a Braille display, you're not going to hold it in one hand.
No.
And then,
no.
Leave the Braille with the other hand, so it's in front of your face.
Yeah.
Usually, you'll have the Braille display sitting on a desk or on your lap or something.
We want you to be able to like read this on the train or something.
Right. Well, you still put it
on
your lap.
Put it on your lap, if there was some type of fold-over case that like made into a little stand, would that help?
I don't think, no, not a stand, but you do need a case.
Yes,
you
a case.
You would hold it at the same angle that you visually would.
No.
You'd have it flat.
I would say a case with a strap that goes around your neck.
Or a strap. An adjustable strap.
The one thing about a rubber thing in the back that would be good is if you're on the train, it won't slip off your lap.
I would say rubber on the bottom, not on the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rubber on the bottom, non-slip stuff.
And in terms of buttons, what's easiest in terms of a volume button or a directional pad?
In terms of direction, you're talking about advancing, you mean from one line to the next? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, advancing or changing the volume if there's an audio function.
Is there a most accessible place to put the buttons in terms of where your hands would be while you're reading?
Probably for your thumbs. So that would be if you're reading from on the top of the display.
So
your thumbs could hit the front.
The front portion.
Like in other words, like here, for example, like where.
Oh, okay.
Like on the front.
Okay.
We would also have a website. Is there any way we can design the website to make it most accessible?
So follow the W3C guidelines. Yeah. You go to the webpage for w3c.mit.edu.
If I had to say one quick thing about web design, keep it simple.
Okay.
And make sure all of your links and stuff have alt tags.
Okay. We were thinking of having like an audio feed when you would open up the website.
No, don't do that. No.
Well, everybody, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This has been very helpful.
Keep us posted. Let us know how you make out.
Good luck.
We like updates.
Okay.